Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
Guest host for the day, Thomas Feigl. Mom is out of commission. She had surgery on her vocal folds yesterday, and thank God it seems to have gone well. Anybody who is praying for her, thank you. Thank you so much. Please continue praying for her recovery to be speedy and for everything to go well. She told me that she's in a little bit of pain, which I suppose is to be expected after you get a vocal nodule removed, but obviously she won't be coming back to the show or talking at all for a little while. It's kind of funny. She's forbidden from even like moving her mouth to make the shapes of words because when you open your mouth and pretend to speak, even if you're not phonating, if you're not making any noise, your brain will send the signals to your throat to like move your vocal folds and all the muscles that control your vocal mechanism, and that can be damaging as well. So she's not even allowed to mouth words. And it was funny when I came over to do the show today. She caught herself. She was going to try mouthing words to me, and the period that she was on vocal rest, she used to do that all the time, mouth words, and I can't understand anything that she's trying to communicate when she does that. So it's just as well, I think, because she used to get really frustrated because I couldn't understand what she was trying to say by mouthing words at me. But anyway, prayers are appreciated, and praising the Lord that the surgery appears to have gone well, and hopefully her recovery will be swift. I don't really have any idea of what I'm going to talk about today. I'm just going to meander around subjects that pique my interest, starting with the Supreme Court nomination and the death of Antonin Scalia. I've heard numerous talk show hosts and pundits talking about, oh, Obama should wait to nominate somebody for the Supreme Court position. And I understand the frustration of people who are Republican/conservative who are worried that Obama will appoint somebody who is incredibly liberal to the bench. Obviously, he's going to nominate somebody who's incredibly liberal to the bench. That's what he does. He is incredibly liberal. I don't know why you would expect anything else. I've heard people and Mitch McConnell saying, well, there's no reason that he can't wait, and Senator Ron Johnson, who I am aware has been on the show before, I heard giving an interview. All due respect to Ron, but this isn't a constitutional crisis of any sort, and we should just let the people decide, do the talking of who they want to be nominated by how they vote in the presidential election. I can't think of a more fair democratic way to do things. Well, that's a tricky position for somebody who's a constitutionalist, isn't it? I mean, it is the job of the president to nominate somebody for the Supreme Court position. That's his job. I feel like we're wasting energy here talking about, well, he should just wait, or we're going to try and make him wait, and what are you going to do? That's his job, to nominate somebody to the Supreme Court. This is why he shouldn't have been elected in the first place. This is why it's so concerning, because he has the power to nominate somebody that we don't like. It feels like an issue that's already over to me. You know what I mean? Sure, I do not like the idea that Mr. Obama has the power to nominate somebody to the Supreme Court, and he'll probably nominate a horrible liberal person. But there it is. That's the situation that we're in. It's kind of frustrating to hear all this political ado about trying to change things that we can't change. I feel like it's wasted energy. I don't know what they expect we should do about this. I mean, I suppose he could wait, but it's kind of Mr. Obama's prerogative whether he's going to wait for the next president or not. And that's the situation that we've created by voting him into office. I don't know if you were following the Bundy Ranch situation and how that all ended recently. I actually listened to the live stream of the call that the last occupiers made to, what is her name, Michelle Fiore, I think. I listened to that on my computer with my wife the night that was happening. And I don't have a strong reaction to any of it. I mean, that's kind of what I expected would happen. Yes, it's outrageous. A lot of things about the whole situation are outrageous. And it's outrageous that the media weren't allowed to be there when the last occupiers were escorted out. Do I trust the FBI to tell the whole truth about everything that happened? No. They've already gunned down an innocent, unarmed man in cold blood. But that is what it is. The thing that really burns me is the arrest of Cliven Bundy, because apparently he was arrested for the standoff in 2014. You remember that? On the Bundy Ranch? Like 1,000 people showing up and telling federal agents, you have to go through us if you want to get to Cliven Bundy, and they stood down. And it reeks of political maneuvering to me that all of a sudden, 2 years later, right at the end of his son's big hoo-ha with the government, all of this going on, it seems like an ideal time for them to move in and just say, oh, you're arrested, because how many people even know the difference between Cliven Bundy and Ammon Bundy? And who they are. They have the same last name. And it's going to get mixed in with the news that the Bundy standoff is over. It's the perfect time for that news item to come out so that people just don't notice and they don't care. And it undermines everything that was accomplished by the standoff in 2014. So I made a post on Facebook about it. I said, I feel the necessity to express this opinion publicly. I am angry that Cliven Bundy was arrested. He should be let go immediately. And I got an interesting response from somebody who was remarkably respectful. You know, normally I get a lot of comments on Facebook posts from liberal friends and people that don't have enough brain cells to pick their nose, and just the logic of their comments alone is just so disheartening. I don't want to bother responding. And then they're rude on top of it. But this guy has a brain, I think. He's very liberal, but I've worked with him. Nice guy. And he said, respectfully, he broke the law for decades. And I said, I don't believe that's correct. He said, and then he said this, then he has many, referring to Clive and Bundy, many, many opportunities for recourse through the courts and the legislature. If you don't like the law, fight it. If the courts don't work, run for office or support candidates that will help you change it. You might not like the law, but that is the law at present. There are other options than continuing to flagrantly break it. And I read that, and I thought, I don't want to get into this, and I just wrote, I disagree, because I just didn't want to break the whole thing down, but then he had to be a true class act and offer this comment. Then what's your basis? I'm truly curious, as you're an extremely bright guy whom I respect very much. What a compliment. Look at the civil rights movement or marriage equality or interracial marriage or suffrage. Activists of all backgrounds and political stripes changed unjust laws through patience, peaceful protest, lobbying, and actively petitioning their elected officials. In the case of the Tea Party, running to replace the politicians they disagreed with. If Mr. Bundy's cause is just, why didn't he seek any of those avenues? Why did he choose to confront federal officers with a posse and weapons? Why did he turn it into a media event? Even civil disobedience is effective when it's peaceful. I guess if one was being really, really gracious, one could consider what he did civil disobedience, but there was no reason for threats and weapons to become involved. So I had to give him a response. He was so polite, and I probably spent a couple hours crafting this carefully. But, I mean, the short answer to his question, why didn't he seek all of the legal, quote-unquote, legal avenues going through the courts and electing people to support your cause and whatnot? The short answer is he did. He did all of those things for a very long time. He and many other people have been fighting a legal battle against the government and their massive unconstitutional land grab in the West for a very long time. But I broke it down for him. I quoted an article that says his, meaning Clive and Bundy, his legal battle with the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, over grazing rights, one that has resonated across the region, is ongoing. Mr. Bundy has refused to pay $1.2 million in grazing fees to the BLM, arguing that the land belongs to the state, not the federal government. The land rights issue is particularly heated in Nevada, where 85% of the land within the state's borders is federally owned. And I remember seeing, I might have played part of this on the show before, actually, the article on Conservative Treehouse. I think it might have been Lavoie. I'm not 100% sure about that. I think it was the man who was gunned down by the FBI who pointed out the fact in a video in that article that our freedom depends on our ability to own the land. The government cannot have sovereign ownership over all of the land, because everything comes from the land, ultimately. Everything that we have, and if the government owns it, the government controls it. And if the government controls it, then it controls us. That was his whole point. And I believe he's correct. And I said, I believe he, meaning Clive and Bundy, and many other protesters are correct in their assertion that the land belongs to the state and not the federal government, and he is perfectly within his right not to sell it to them. That is the law according to the Constitution. And I broke down Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, which says, the Congress shall have power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may, by cession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state, in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. To put it simply, the federal government is allowed to govern 10 square miles of land in each state as the seat of government, and if it wants more than that, the particular land must be ceded to the federal government by the state government. The state legislature has to approve it. To the best of my knowledge, the Nevada state legislature did not cede Mr. Bundy's land to the federal government's ownership or authority. And I also talked about Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2, and I might skip over some of my response, but it's been used, I think, in several arguments against Mr. Bundy to say that his stand is not constitutional because of this clause. And there's a lot of history and court cases and stuff that you can look up. I said, I do see the wisdom in the decision in the case of Camfield versus the United States in 1897, where the court said, while we do not undertake to say that Congress has the unlimited power to legislate against nuisances within a state, which it would have within a territory, we do not think the admission of a territory as a state deprives it of the power of legislating for the protection of the public lands, though it may thereby involve the exercise of what is ordinarily known as the police power, so long as such power is directed solely to its own protection. A different rule would place the public domain of the United States completely at the mercy of state legislation. I think a common sense reading of the clause lends itself to this interpretation, considering the word needful. And the clause says, the Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. This was adopted to make the, I think it's the Northwest Ordinance, constitutional. And I pointed out, the Endangered Species Act is kind of a key in this debate. I do not believe that the federal government has the authority to seize state land exceeding its enumerated power in any clause of the Constitution against the wishes or without the approval of the state in which it is located or the proprietary owners of the land, because it contains an endangered species. Any law, and I'm not aware how this works, if there is a law that says that the federal government has the right to seize land containing endangered species, any law that was written that way is unconstitutional and should not be upheld. It would please me to point out that the Endangered Species Act has never actually saved any endangered species, and that independent studies have been done on these lands which find that the most helpful thing for various wild, endangered, or non-endangered species is for the ranchers to continue ranching the same way they have for generations, and most of the land being claimed by the federal government is encroaching on ranchers' land because the endangered species are going towards that land. But it doesn't really matter, because that would be applicable to a discussion of what the law should be, and doesn't tell us about what the law is. There's a Washington Post article that says, Cliven Bundy, whose family homesteaded his ranch in 1877 and who accuses the government of a land grab, are digging in for a fight and say they will not willingly sell their grazing privileges to create another preserve. That was before the whole standoff in 2014 went down. But clearly, they were not willing to sell their land. The federal government claim to the Bundy land is unconstitutional. They did not have a grant from the Nevada State Legislature, to the best of my knowledge, to claim the land under the enumerated power in the Enclave Clause, and they did not purchase the land from the Bundys. The Bundys were, in fact, very vocal and adamant in their desire to keep the land. All that is to say nothing of the harassment and unconscionable behavior that is anecdotally reported of the Bureau of Land Management officials against the Bundys, Hammonds, and many other families in the region, which doesn't necessarily make a legal difference in whether or not it was the federal government's right to seize the land, but it does add to my personal frustration, and I'm sure it should add to everyone's personal frustration. at the situation. I mean, the things that the Bureau of Land Management have been accused of are unconscionable. It's harassment. So more to his point, I answered, why the weapons, threats, and media attention? Cliven Bundy has been fighting this in court for the last 22 years and taking every other avenue that he mentioned. The reason that there was a standoff is because the Bureau of Land Management and the FBI decided they did not want to fight the legal battle anymore, and Cliven Bundy, being the American patriot that he is, refused to comply with the completely ridiculous and unjust imprisonment. The government wouldn't take it anymore. They said, we're just going to come and arrest you, and you can be in jail. What is he supposed to do at that point? He can stay a free man, or he can be a prisoner. It was stand or don't stand. Also worth noting, and more to this gentleman's point who commented on my post, not a single shot was fired at the 2014 standoff. At no time did Cliven or the other protesters say they had any intent of violent conflict against anyone. They carried firearms at the protest when federal agents came to arrest Cliven Bundy in 2014, which is their constitutionally protected right, and the reason why it is their constitutionally protected right is exactly for situations like this, to protect the people from the government. That is why they brought their guns to the protest. And that is why other tactics would not have been appropriate. I didn't put this in the post because it would be opening a whole nother can of worms, but I mean, he brought up like civil rights and civil disobedience and the tactics that were used in the civil rights movement. Well, that was a movement, okay? Those kinds of conflicts were talking about something a little bit different in nature. That's talking about trying to change the law, or at least the application of the law, as it is understood it is supposed to be applied. Black people at that time were technically free. They could no longer be held as slaves during the civil rights movement, but they were being treated unfairly and unjustly. They were not being treated in accordance with the law. That was the whole point. That was the movement. And that's why civil disobedience rather than armed resistance was an appropriate tactic. In this case, we are talking about the government not adhering to the law. This is not an attempt to change the law. This is a rogue, tyrannical state. Why turn it into a media spectacle? Because cops lie. It's harder for the FBI or BLM or the protesters or anyone else to try something underhanded and lie about it when the world is watching. I also believe it's because Cliven Bundy's case is one of many similar cases of other ranchers in the West. There has been an extreme government overreach which is forcing ranchers out of business and moving the country freakishly close to state dependence and eventually complete communism. We will not remain a free people if the government owns all the land. So to summarize, and I did write this in my comment, he didn't sell his land. He shouldn't be fined. He shouldn't be jailed. The federal government does not have the right to seize it. It is specifically limited from doing so by the Enclave Clause. And they do not have the right to fine him since they do not own the land. Cliven Bundy was faced with no other alternatives but to unjustly surrender his freedom or to stand for it. This is not a case of fighting to change the law, basically everything I just said to you. And Mom has walked in the room and is pointing something out to me. The difference between changing the law and making the government respect the law. The Battle of Athens comes to mind. That was a quote from Mom herself. She wrote it down. I also said in my comment, working to change the law and fight the courts and elect the right people isn't going to do a whole lot of good if the laws they write aren't followed. Duh. That is why the standoff needed to happen the way it did. And all of this is why it makes my blood boil, which is kind of the point of my post, when I see that the feds decided rather than letting him go free to instead just wait 2 years until people are no longer paying attention or don't care and just ambush him. Because it was an ambush. They came to the airport as he was flying into Oregon and ambushed him. It is cowardice, it's wrong, and it needs to be spoken about and paid attention to because it undermines the sacrifice of every protester who went to the ranch in 2014 and every patriot who has ever fought for our freedom. And that's why I thought it was necessary to make that comment and why I think it's necessary for us to talk about it. And I do. It was cowardice on the part of the government to ambush him like that. If he broke the law and he needs to be arrested, what they need to do is confront him right away, not wait till 2 years until we're not paying attention and ambush him, just because it's convenient. If the public has a problem with them taking him away, they need to confront that head on instead of being cowards. I think I've got about 3 minutes left. You know, it's interesting for me to watch Bernie Sanders' popularity just grow farther than any pundits thought it would. It's interesting because I've watched his campaign. I've listened to the things that he stands for, the things that he says, and it does not surprise me like it surprises or it seems to surprise people who are older than me. And I think I did a show about this where I read a bunch of Facebook comments from people that I know about my age. I don't know, and maybe Bernie Sanders is kind of a blessing in disguise, because I've always said I don't think that people who are older than me really get it. I don't think they get how dumb my generation is. Not necessarily that they're stupid, but they haven't been educated properly. They haven't been taught what socialism is and why it's a bad thing. I don't think they understand how lost the millennials are. And in a way, it's kind of fun because I just listening to the commentary and the tone of it that I hear regarding Bernie Sanders from conservative pundits, I'm starting to get it, which is kind of cool. So, I mean, I guess Bernie Sanders is kind of a blessing in disguise, but an incredibly dangerous one. I mean, I don't know that I want them to get it that way, you know, with the danger of him actually being elected. And I still don't know who I'm going to vote for president. I keep hearing so-called conservative candidates who say, well, we're going to get in there and we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. Why are we talking about replacing Obamacare? Why? This thing is clearly unconstitutional on its face, no matter what the Supreme Court says. It's obviously unconstitutional. I do not want it to be replaced. I want it repealed. Our money, our financial system is socialist, our education system is socialist. Let's not keep going down this path. I think I'm almost out of time. So once again, prayers for Mom are appreciated, and we are all an irate, tireless minority of one. We can all make a difference, and we're all supposed to. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.